This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's Friday, November 20th, 2020, and it's a Relevant Podcast. In Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Austin, Texas, it's author, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
And from Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner. He's doing it again.
He does it.
That's my thing. Like every now and again, you just
this is an audio podcast. You gotta say something. Oh, man. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to one of the biggest actresses out there and an outspoken Christian, Letitia Wright, is joining us. Now, here's what's interesting about Letitia. You would think, you know, if you know an actor or an actress who's outspoken about their faith, they probably grew up in the church. Think Chris Pratt, you know, others. Not Letitia. She came to Christ recently. And we talked to her about that. The story is awesome.
Oh, I can't
wait. I'm a huge fan. I'm over here fangirling. I ain't going to even hold y'all right now. You can't see it on my face because it's an audio podcast, but I'm fangirling for sure. Letitia, I love you.
She was such a scene stealer in
man.
You know, especially, I mean, in everything. She has a really great episode of Black Mirror. I don't know if you guys are Black Mirror fans.
Yes. But I love that episode.
Yeah, she has this like roadside little kind of museum of really kind of weird
artifacts. That was such a weird episode.
But that's Letitia Wright. That's Letitia Wright in there. And I feel like it was her humanity, because that episode is totally bonkers, right? Like a lot of Black Mirror. But if it wasn't grounded by someone who had so much humanity in just the way she carries herself, I feel like it kind of would have got away from her. And then you look at, you know, her performance in the Avengers movies with Shuri. You know, I mean, she literally steals the scene from everyone she shares it with. She's hilarious and like really charming, and I'm stoked she's on the show, and she's having such a cool career. Good for her, man.
Yeah, she's killing
it. Wasn't it like 2 years ago she was the number one top grossing actor in Hollywood because she was in Star Wars, Black Panther, like all Avengers Infinity War, like the biggest movie, she was in all of them.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, and there was a couple other that are escaping me at the moment. But, I mean, yeah, she's been on the hottest of hot streaks. And I think she is someone who...
Culminating today.
Yeah.
It's on the Relevant Podcast.
On the Relevant Podcast.
Yes!
Yeah. Building up. Her career has been building up to this moment.
For this moment right here.
That you're going to hear in a few. Also, after that, we have the next installment of our fall wellness series, you know, coming up on Gluttony Week. Thanksgiving.
Oh, gosh.
But this isn't about that. This week, we're taking a holistic look at wellness, and we talked to mental health advocate Brittany Moses about how to find a good counselor and the proper role of faith in mental health struggles, which is something the church needs to do a better job talking
Love
about.
It.
So we will start the conversation here.
Love it.
Not also, we've been having this conversation for a long time.
Also, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. Cameron, you set me up last week.
About COVID?
About the vaccine
changing
your DNA. Do you know how many DMs I have from relevant people saying, hey, Derek, it's so irresponsible. This is not true. It's not going to change your DNA. They're sending me these like,
you know what's funny?
And stuff. And I'm like, go ahead.
Not one person hit me up and not one person hit up relevant. They just all hit you up.
Why me? Like, it's Cameron that said it's going to change your DNA. But you know what? I thought about this. I said, that's how information spreads, though.
Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like someone hears something and then they say it and repeat it.
It's like playing telephone.
Yeah.
I heard stuff on the news and I knew I wasn't getting it quite right. I kind of said that. I'm like, it's not a normal vaccine the way we think about it. It works more at the genetic level. I do remember that. And I didn't know exactly what it was. You were the one who said it turns you into werewolves, you know, like zombies or whatever.
Listen. Here's the thing. When you make a mistake and you either are inadvertently disseminating misinformation or simply misheard something, the right move here, as we've learned, is to just double down. Because even if even if what you're saying isn't the truth, if you just will it to be, maybe that will become the truth. Like, let's say there was widespread fraud. If you just say it and say it and say it.
And then if somebody disputes you, like working in your administration, you who is the head of the area that made sure that there was no fraud, and he says there was no fraud, fire him. Because you got... You just got to triple down at that point. You got to quadruple down. Just keep it going.
But imagine that dude, though, Cameron. Imagine him, you know, listening to Donald Trump say, like, this is the most insecure, unsecured election. He's like, this is his life's work. He's been working on this election for 4 years straight. He's like, wait a minute, what are you saying? Like, I've done everything I can do. And then he tells the truth, and then he gets fired. That guy, he had the worst string of luck period.
He oversaw literally historically proven to be the most secure election in world history. He got fired for doing it.
The only one with worse luck than that guy are the thousands of people who literally volunteered their time to conduct, you know, and a lot of people like
patriots care about democracy
and have been subjected to harassment. And, you know, some of these people are personally, named in these affidavits that, you know, I mean, it's literally the government attacking volunteers who, you know, the theory evidently is that thousands of volunteers from across different partisan leanings across different states were able to conspire to pull off widespread, you know, fraud. Like it's a whole thing. And,
you know, also they are the ones behind the zombie vaccine. I'm telling you, it's the same conspiracy. It's all connected, Jesse.
I know.
Just got to dig into it.
You don't got to tell me.
Hey, before we move on, we have relevant news coming up in a minute. But Jamie, you've been on a big media blitz for your new book, UBU.
Listen.
And I heard through the grapevine that you had a unique interview this week. Tell us about it.
Listen, I've been on all the podcasts, all the things. That's what you do. And then my publicist was like, hey, Jenny McCarthy, you guys know Jenny McCarthy.
Legend.
Jenny McCarthy has a radio show. Would you like to go on it? And I was like, you mean Jenny McCarthy that used to be like on MTV?
Playboy. Dirty Mouth.
Singled out.
Yeah.
And she's on The Mask.
She's on The Mask.
Singer.
Wasn't she married to Jim Carrey?
Yeah, for a while.
Yes. Okay. Well, and now she's married to a New Kids on the Block guy, Donnie. I went on her podcast. It aired on Wednesday morning. And you guys, doing interviews, you guys are probably better at this than me. I get so nervous and anxious when I interview people who are blatantly not Christian-esque, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Yeah. On our interview, she said the F word a few times. That just doesn't normally happen when I do interviews, right? I'm not saying she's bad for doing that. I'm just saying it's not my norm. And I always am like, it's just stressful. It stresses me out.
Did you participate?
I did not use any foul language.
Oh, okay. To make her more comfortable. You didn't? Okay.
No.
I don't know.
I mean, I say curse words in my life. I'm not opposed to them, but...
Well,
why are you not opposed to them?
Listen,
do you encourage your kids to curse?
No, I don't. But I tell my kids that, like, if you're going to say words like that, you have to be held responsible for them. So if you're a grown up and you're really angry about something,
how are you held responsible for them?
Well, because I know I'm a grown up. I'm not going to curse on a podcast. I'm not going to curse in front of my parents. I'm not going to curse on a stage.
Why not in front of your parents if they're fine?
Because I feel interrogated right now because my parents might be offended. And so I would choose not to, although I might. Listen, guys, I'm a grown woman.
She's slaying this, though. Like, she is killing this. She's thought through this.
I have thought through this because I don't like saying, like, oh, that's a bad word. Well, who says? Yeah. Like, just be a grown up about it and know when to use that.
Well, then why did Jenny's language throw you?
It didn't throw. I wasn't offended. I'm just saying I don't normally do interviews where someone uses the F word because I write faith-based books and I have a faith-based podcast and those type of things. So it was just a new environment. I wasn't offended.
Did you send your audience to go listen to it?
I don't care. So I'm not offended.
Did you tweet about it?
I don't tweet, but I did put on Instagram.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did any of your followers like write you that they were offended?
Oh, I'm sure somebody is. 100%. I will get a "I'm so very disappointed in you" message.
No, your followers. I mean, your name of your show is The Happy Hour. Like, yeah. Like, I mean, it's,
but it's not
like,
the effing happy hour.
Yeah.
But still, though, but I mean, here, if I mean, they drink, surely they say a wordy just dirt literally every now and again.
Maybe they just think literally that it's the other version of that name. And it's just like an hour listening to Jamie makes me happy.
You can go there if you want, but I love a happy hour.
But aren't we kind of
fresh drinks? Yes.
Yeah. I totally understand the change of, you know, kind of pace sometimes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think we're all kind of have evolved to the point, you know, in our kind of views of language and profanity, and to like the intention of even like how scripture addresses, you know, thinking on things that are good and pure. Like, I don't know necessarily think that that necessarily means like if you use the wrong combinations of letters, like you're in violation of that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's kind of more about the intent of things. So I think it's cool that you had an interview with Gina McCarthy. I think she is super fun and super talented.
She was super fun.
Super, and a super cool person. So I
it
think
was
it's
great,
dope.
But it just makes me sometimes get sweaty armpits, you know.
She had
not
a great,
the sweaty armpits.
I used to watch the Wahlburgers on A&E, the reality show for the Wahlburgers. She was on that when she was with Donnie. I don't know if she still is.
She
with
still
Donnie,
is, FYI, in case you need to know.
Oh, there you go. Very excited to hear that. Good for them.
Great couple.
Yeah. All right. We'll move the show along. Stay tuned up next. It's Relevant News. We got a spirit, and I know you hear it. There's no give up, give up, give up, give up in us. Your path was running easy when the feeling was strong. Who do you choose to be? You're listening to Judah and the Lion. The song is Spirit. Well, today's show is brought to you by Tyndale's Life Recovery Bible. Life has been tough for many of us over the last year. This is especially true if you're struggling with addiction or dependency. But there's help available. You will encounter God's grace, love, and redemption in the pages of the Life Recovery Bible. This Bible integrates the 12-step program with Scripture, provides a devotional reading plan, includes encouraging recovery profiles, and much more. Get your copy of the Life Recovery Bible. Go to www.liferecoverybible.com. Okay, it's time for Relevant News. Relevant News. Please welcome to the show Relevant Senior Editor Tyler Huckabee, telling us what's happening this week at the intersection of faith and culture. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, everybody.
So what's going on?
Well, we're going to start. We are going to start with a pretty serious subject today. But then things are going to get lighter as we go along. So brace yourself. So
you're giving us a trajectory here. All right,
we're starting at the deep end of the pool, and then we're going to be swimming up.
We're doing a cannonball right into the deep end, swimming toward the shallow.
You're like babies. I'm throwing you into the pool, and you're going to learn how to swim. They say this works. But we are going to start with something that is pretty important. I think we've discussed this before, but I do want to offer this caveat every time. We do not cover every single scandal that happens in a church on this podcast, because neither we nor probably any other media outlet has the resources to do all of that.
We do not have the airtime.
Yo!
That would be its own media platform. Its own thing. Yeah.
Dang.
It would be a live stream 24/7.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's unfortunate, but it is true. But our rule of thumb is that if we have given you a platform in the past, then we do need to report. Then we hold ourselves responsible to report on when things go awry. And things did go very seriously awry at Hillsong New York over the past couple of weeks, as I'm sure many people have seen, especially if you've been following along relevantmagazine.com. We've been trying to follow along with updates on that a few times, and just wanted to give a little bit of an update, sort of a summary here of what we know so far. As you probably heard, Hillsong New York pastor Carl Lentz stepped down. He resigned, and then shortly after that announcement was made, it was revealed that he had been unfaithful in his marriage. There have been a lot of reports, none of them particularly substantiated on exactly what happened there or who it was with, but you can, if you're interested in gossip, you can go look that up, obviously. Since that time, Hillsong founding pastor Brian Houston has announced that an independent investigation has been commissioned to look into what he called the inner workings of Hillsong New York City following the termination of Carl Lentz. He tweeted this. He said, "We need a solid foundation for a fresh start and new beginning." He also said the best is yet to come. He sent a statement that was first acquired by Religion News Service, in which he said that the church has heard from, these are his words here, from a number of people about their experiences and concerns following Lentz's firing. He said, quote, "We are taking this extremely seriously, and on the basis of this report, we will be better positioned to take whatever actions are deemed necessary to right the wrongs and see Hillsong East Coast to move forward in a way that enables many more people to find their hope in Jesus." So there's obviously a lot more there.
You said at the beginning that Carl resigned, and then you just said firing. Do you know which one is
it's a little bit unclear based on the statements that were put out, whether it doesn't sound like he resigned of his own free will. Either he was told to resign or the position is terminated is the language that Hillsong itself has used.
Gotcha.
So that probably means firing, but it's not super clear.
Gotcha.
So just kind of an abundance of clarity there.
We've covered this on our other platforms as, credible news. We gave, we told the announcement that Hillsong made. We covered Carl's message that he posted on Instagram. We've just said, here's the information and that's kind of thing. No salaciousness, no gossip. And we've gotten criticized from everybody.
like for not talking about it?
Yeah. Because, why aren't you talking about it on the podcast? You talked about Jerry, Jerry Jr., and it's like, are you trying to cover it up? And then we've talked about, and then where we did post it, very prominent Christian leaders who are friends with Carl were calling us out for gossiping and just, slander and all this stuff. And it's just like, damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? I mean, so it's like, we are not happy about this information. This is painful for a lot of people. Obviously, Carl's been on this platform a lot of times. We're not canceling Carl Lentz. We are praying for him and his family and all those affected by this. And, we believe in restoration, and we hope that ultimately healing can come in all of this. And we're pulling for them. But, we just do feel like we owe it to our audience to report what's out there. So
I think this is always so hard because, we did talk about this a lot with Jerry and how that could hurt so many people under his leadership, that then they could be like, I don't know how to trust the church. I don't know how to trust God.
Right.
You were so, prominent. And so then you look at someone like this and you're like, oh, there are so many people who will look back and say, Carl Lentz was like an integral part of me following Jesus. Like I fell in love with Jesus because of his teaching. And I think that can be hard for someone to then have to deal with. Well, was that fake? Was that not real? And, again, I've said it before. I just want to encourage someone to know that like Carl, Jerry, Cameron, Jesse, Derek, Tyler, me, Clark, none of us are Jesus. And so we're always
Why'd you put me in that list?
We're always you're not going Jesus. To let people down.
Some of us are way further on the spectrum than others.
Because Cameron doesn't use curse words. Cameron's closest. Yeah. Cameron's closest because his mouth is purest. But on the same sense too, like we're all very much held accountable for what we're doing. And as leaders, they're held higher accountable. All of us who have a voice that people are listening to, we have a high standard that we have to be held accountable for. Everyone has a high standard. But you know what I mean is like there is a big, big accountability for people who are teaching in that magnitude. And so, again, I have full hope that Carl and his wife can be restored and he can love Jesus and all the things. But it doesn't make it any less hard right now for the people in his church.
And Jerry, too. I have hopes that, Jerry and his marriage will be restored. But at the same time, I think the thing here, Jamie, just to piggyback off of what you said, that's why the scripture saying, James, man should not desire to teach because they'll incur stricter judgment. That's not just from God himself, but that's also from people. Mm. Like when you put yourself on that platform, you're going to get stricter judgment. But I think the difference between Carl and Jerry is it would seem outwardly that Carl is accepting, the mistakes that he's made. And Jerry, you kind of just got to find them out.
Yeah.
Like, I may be wrong and maybe I missed it, but I haven't really seen a real actual apology from Jerry. It's like, even when it's an apology, then next thing you know, it's something else you know, rolls out and rolls out. So that's why I think the Jerry thing kind of stayed in the news, is because the denial, and then also that it's just a snowball of thing after thing after thing. Doesn't make either one better or worse. It's just when one minute, you know, somebody's doing hip curls with two girls on a barbell, then the next minute they have their pants unzipped, then the next minute, you know what I'm saying, they're halfway drunk on our interview. Like, that's different than a guy posting and saying, hey, I made a mistake, I'm gonna focus on my family, and they get out of the way. You know what I mean? I think that's the difference, why, as far as the coverage is concerned.
And there's other leaders even recently that have admitted to, you know, extramarital infidelities and different things like that. And again, we're not covering all that. That's not what we do. You know, but this one was unique because Carl was even on this podcast just a couple months ago. So, you know, it's just one of those things that we felt like we had to bring that information. So
you're not going to turn this into TMZ?
Christian 24/7 live stream, man. I'm telling you,
we can do it.
It'd be easy to fill that content feed. That's sad, but there you go.
I mean, heck, we could fill it sometimes with our own lives, you guys. Okay, like, just we're all screwing up here.
It's true, and
he's always so positive. Huh?
Well, it's, I mean, you know what? If it happens with one of us, then it will be addressed on this podcast, and we all live with it. And a lot of we all live with that reality, and so we'll cover it, and we're aware that the standard that we hold others to will obviously be held to us as well.
Mm. Yeah, I experienced that a year ago.
Exactly.
The public knew that I was a bad leader, and they heard all about it. You know, and I was held to account for that as well. I mean, it's part of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the deep stuff. That was the hardest one. If we got through that, we can get through it.
Tyler, you threw the baby in the deep end and it drowned, dude. It's at the bottom of the pool.
Backstrokes. Just up and down. It's incredible. Scientists are baffled.
What a grisly metaphor.
This reminds me of Ozark. If you ever seen that episode where he was baptizing the baby, that's what happened. We just baptized the baby.
Hey, that's a real way they teach kids here in Florida. I was at the YMCA at 6 months old, and they throw the babies in the deep end.
It's very unsettling.
Of the pool.
Yeah, it's called natural selection. If it don't make it up, it ain't strong enough.
Oh my gosh!
Are you serious?
Well, there's a teacher right there with the baby. Yeah. They're not throwing a baby in and watching them. Well, hope they come back up.
Hey, I was gonna say that's what's wrong with Florida now. Y'all crazy?
Just throwing
baby in a pool. Nobody.
They're instilling terror in children almost from birth, and just be like, hey, what would seem to be in other parts of the country, literally the most reckless thing you could do, which is to throw a child into the deep end of a pool. Here, that's called just good smart parenting.
Jesse, we don't have community pools that are 3 feet deep like they do there in Virginia. You go 25 feet in any direction, there's a water.
You gotta know how to
fend for yourself. They give little baby sticks to fight off the gators, and it's all good.
No, they don't do that.
Well,
side note, did y'all see that video of that gator?
The chunky boy.
Yeah. That mug looked like
a dinosaur. It was like a dinosaur.
Man,
that's why y'all have fences around your pools, right?
No.
In Florida? But no. I've seen it a lot in Florida.
I don't.
What's his name on College Today? What's the old guy? I mean,
Lee Corso.
Yeah. You see him every Saturday. He's at his house. He's got a fence around it. He's got his.
Yeah, some cautious people do.
Okay.
I'll say this. I'm kind of surprised that when it comes to cool exotic animal pets, maybe it's just because they aren't trainable, because from my understanding, reptiles, you know, don't have the biggest brains, or amphibians, or whatever an alligator is. You know, compared to mammals, but
it's a reptile.
But when you see like back in the day, like Mike Tyson or one of these cats that literally had like a tiger for a pet, right? That was like a status symbol of like, I got the baddest pet around. Why does someone have one of those huge alligators on a leash? Like one of those big 14 footers, because it's like, hey dude, the white tiger is cool, but mine looks like a dinosaur. Like, why don't we see high end exotic alligators for pets, you know?
Cause they run 35 miles an hour in short spurts. That tail will kill you by itself, and there's no way you could. If it wanted to eat you, it would eat you.
So let's give the kids a stick.
35 miles per hour.
That's why all the lakefront property we have. If you have a dog dogs get eaten all the time on the lakes because gators will sit there in the weeds, wait for the dog to be walking around, and it'll... And if you can catch a dog, you could catch a human.
Okay. You know? Real quick, I'm going to rank. I'm going to... And Tyler, I know you've got important news that we need to get to, but I'm going to rank.
It's super rich. News.
It's super rich people, exotic pets that are just a flex. Number one is obviously a monkey that wears a diaper and has a big lollipop, and you can put him in like a funny Sherlock Holmes outfit from time to time. That's number one. Number
like
two,
Michael Jackson used to have?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And his name's like Mr. Pickles or something, yeah, right? Oh my God. You teach him... or Henry or something. It's either got to be a two-syllable male name or Mister, yeah, followed by a funny, hilarious inanimate, yeah, object. You know,
yeah.
You know, Mister Diapers works or something like
Mr.
that.
So, Mister Bubbles,
yeah, Mister Bubbles. It has to be Mister. Can't just be Bubbles. It's got to be Mister. Or it could be like Sebastian or some like multiple-syllable male name. Okay,
no, it's so, just okay. Bastion. Bastion.
Bastion. Yeah, this is my and this.
That was
monkey.
All number one.
This is my monkey son. This is my monkey son, Bastion. Come into the room, Bastion. And then he comes in and he's wearing like
Jesse,
a hilarious,
you know,
little sailor
full
outfit.
Well, because of your own experience, why there aren't more monkeys and orangutan pets?
They tend to turn on their masters. And here's the
I
other thing.
I don't know that they know this story. I think you need to tell them.
Okay. I will tell them. But real quick, I need to say this as well. It's that. And I've thought about this. I've thought it would be really cool to have like a pet monkey that you see like celebrities have, but that, you know, they're always like just hanging out on the, maybe a leash, maybe a, you know, they get the little diaper on. No one thinks about having to change that monkey diaper. Nobody thinks about that. Okay. But I want you to think about it and be like, I probably don't want to do it. Okay. So real quick, monkey number one, number two, exotic white tiger. Number three, I would say this is clearly where it's like a large anaconda or something that you wear as a necklace, you know, on stage for performance reasons. Then I feel like the alligator should come into play. I feel like the alligator's not even in this equation when it comes to cool, exotic, rich people animals, you know?
Well, I think it's because it's so common. It's not rare. If you want an alligator, just come get one. They're right there. Just go get one.
Yeah. Like, you know, I mean? Like in a week, Cameron, you see how many alligators.
Not a 10-foot alligator. A 10-foot alligator is not... That's, you don't see that every day,
you see
buckle.
An alligator every week of your life?
Dude, every body of water has 10 to 12-foot alligators in Florida, dude.
I'm out.
I'm never swimming in Florida. I'm just not doing it.
So Cameron, do you want me to tell that story? I can keep it really quick.
Okay, so Jamie, Derek, Jesse has over the years told a couple stories that have lived on in infamy, and I keep trying to get him to tell them again. He's talking about monkey ownership. He has had a firsthand experience with monkey ownership.
I was hanging out with a guy in college, and he was... you know, we're hanging out in the dorms one night, and he came back, and I could tell he was like a little shaken up, you know? And I was like, Sean, what's going on, man? He's like, well, you know, he was dating a girl who lived off campus, you know, right there in Tulsa. And he was like, you know, things are going well, but man, I had a really weird, you know, a couple weird experiences over, because she wanted me to meet her family. Like, things are progressing fast, but, you know, he was like, when I first got introduced, she was like, hey, I just need to let you know that, you know, before you meet my parents, that my dad has a monkey son and he's very fond of this monkey,
monkey son.
Yes. It was like, they weren't
not
raising
monkey
this.
Pet?
No, they weren't out raising the monkey as a pet. They were raising it as a sibling. Okay.
No.
And she was like, but here's the thing. It's this breed of monkey that for reasons that are, you know, kind of biologists and evolutionary scientists are trying to still determine, they hate the youngest and smallest in the family, which is
what
me,
an orangutan?
It was some large ape. Like, it wasn't a small monkey, okay? It wasn't like a monkey that is gonna have the little symbols and do funny tricks and you can teach to
like
be
from
a
Aladdin.
Teach to be a pickpocket on the streets of the wharf in San Francisco. Not one of those monkeys.
It's like an orangutan.
Like a large, yeah, exactly. And so he's like, we go over there, and I guess monkeys, man, it's something about like the herd mentality or the fact that they're wild animals that for some reason we've tried to domesticate, but they're all about asserting dominance. And so he goes in there. So he's like, so when we go, my dad's really going to want to, the first thing he's going to want to do is to let you meet the monkey son. And he's like, okay. So he goes, and the monkey is in a cage, right? Like, it's straight up large monkey cage. And he's just kind of hanging out, checking out the new guy. And the father walks over by the cage and is like, so this is so-and-so. He's telling the whole backstory. The monkey reaches his hand through the cage and grabs the top of the dad's head with one hand and starts squeezing it and won't let go. Like, and the dad's like trying to play it cool, like, oh, this stuff happens all the time. Sometimes when you have a monkey, sometimes when you have a monkey, oh gosh, he's my skull. Like, and like, so Sean had to end up like slapping the monkey's arm away. And it was very weird. Okay. It was very weird. And he was like, so that was a weird experience. He's like, and then I saw my girlfriend today. And she was like, I don't know if he was riled up because of the visit, but somehow he had gotten out of his cage. Okay. And he, you know, she was sitting in like, this home had like an office, you know, and they had like the family computer set up there and she's doing her homework or whatever. And she sees in the reflection of the screen, the monkey standing directly behind her. And she knows that monkey hates her. Like that monkey is genetically predisposed to hate her and want to kill her. Okay. Like, and she's standing there. She says she's just staring into the reflection of the screen, seeing the monkey, like, just staring at her, like waiting to make his move. So she, like, terrified, she grabs, like, very slowly grabs like a letter opener that's on the desk just in case this goes down.
This is a movie. Who owns a letter opener?
It could go down in a monkey knife fight at any moment. Okay. That's the kind of life she's living. Any moment you could be in a knife fight to the death with a monkey. Okay. So she's standing there just staring and they're kind of in this, like, you know, Mexican standoff, but she's looking at the monkey's reflection. She sees her father, who had evidently gone to, you know, haphazardly throw bananas into the monkey cage and noticed that the door was open. He then goes, she sees in the reflection, the father is then standing in the doorway behind the monkey and he knows I got one shot. So slowly takes off his belt, like a leather belt, and she sees him just pull it back and just whip the monkey in the back. And she said she just heard, like the loudest monkey scream ever. Like she said the monkey threw it. It was just like, and like at that moment, the dad jumped and tackled the monkey and used the belt to, like, and she just got out of there. And she went to her boyfriend.
Why did he hit the monkey in the back? Why didn't he just grab the monkey?
He needed the element of surprise.
Monkey strength.
Exactly. This was the only move there, Derek. It was the only move.
He had like a cantaloupe. I mean, that monkey would have taken him down.
Exactly.
I can think of 300 things he could have did besides smack the monkey in the back.
This is what I have to say. I'm not saying that this girl deserved any of this, but listen, people, don't be bringing those kind of animals into your house. Like, everyone's like, oh, I can't believe the monkey did that. It's what? You can't believe it?
It's a monkey, guys.
That's what they do.
Yeah. Blaming the victim.
Yeah.
No. The thing is, like, at some point, the monkey's going hostile. We just know that, yes. Okay? You have to be prepared for the moment that the monkey is, it's either going to be like, look, we're taking over, or I'm blowing this popsicle stand, you know? And you just have to be willing to do the uncomfortable thing, which is one night, just leave your front door open and just hope the monkey finds his way out. And you never think of it or hear from it again. If you hear a story on the news about a monkey that got loose, you don't say anything and you just pretend it never happened.
Monkey, son.
That happens in Tampa, Monkey Island. I mean, people like had domesticated monkeys and they couldn't handle them after they got too aggressive. And so there's a monkey sanctuary where people just have to discard their monkeys.
Yeah.
What?
It's true. It's Monkey Island. Dude, it's Monkey Island. And over the years, Jesse can tell you, over the years, there have been news where monkeys, because they're smart, have conspired and gotten off of Monkey Island. And there's like feral monkeys roaming Tampa, parts of Tampa.
I see. I'm cool on Florida, bro. Like, I mean, I'm cool on Florida, bro. I'm just going to be honest with you, dog. I just don't really see my retirement home, bro. Imagine just being in your rocking chair and it's hot and a feral monkey just hops on your porch. I'm good.
And then an alligator comes after and eats it right in front of you.
Oh, right in front of you.
I'm cool.
There's a unique, beautiful balance of formerly domesticated wildlife just keeping each other in check. You have gigantic alligators, you have prematurely released anacondas, you have monkeys that have half been trained to live as people, all just kind of mixing and melding in there for one ecological looming disaster. That's what Florida is.
Florida is Australia Junior.
Yep.
What Florida is.
That's actually true. Yep. All right. What else you got, Tyler?
Yeah. Well, that was really good. That was all from the baby metaphor,
was,
I think.
Was that all from Carl Lentz?
But we do. I think we talked
about Hillsong's investigating the monkey problem in Florida. Well, yeah,
it's all going to come together at the end. Just wait. We talked a little bit last week about some promising developments in the COVID vaccine situation, right? That there was last week, Pfizer had come up with a very promising first round development of a vaccine. Now
that doesn't change your DNA, by the way.
No, it doesn't.
I know, because there's been plenty of relevant white ladies in my DMs letting me know. So, thank every last one of you. I will never say that again. So
we're gonna get a little more into that this week, Derek. This one has some Tennessee roots too, because another new report of a very promising and even more promising actually COVID vaccine was published from Moderna, which is another pharmaceutical giant, and it looks even better. It has so far in early tests a higher effectiveness against COVID vaccine than the Pfizer one does. And this one has a pretty fun human interest story behind it, because if one of the major funders of this vaccine was Nashville's own Dolly Parton. As we've discussed, I think before, Dolly got into the vaccine development game as another one of her many, many charitable causes at the urging of her longtime friend, Dr. Naji Abumrad. He's a doctor at Vanderbilt, and he told her about this new vaccine technology called mRNA, which is the technology behind both Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines, which, as we discussed last week, is actually a very different kind of vaccine. It hasn't been used before, but it does not change your actual DNA. Like we said, it actually replicates those spikes that you see on the pictures of the COVID-19, those little spikes. It mimics those instead of the actual cell itself. If that's not totally correct, I do not care. Don't come into my DMs. So that was how I understood
it. Just go ask Dolly.
And don't
listen, man. You do not want to unleash the wrath of
my DMs are
relevant.
Closed.
I'm telling you, in my DMs.
About 6 months ago on Instagram, I accidentally posted something as relevant and hit the hornet's nest of anti-vaxxers.
And they
came out after.
Oh, man.
Be careful.
They're on Twitter all day.
Yeah, they got a lot, they're just waiting. Time on their hands, and they came after us, man.
So Dolly donated $1 million to this is the Dolly Parton Research Fund, and it is now one of the primary funders behind this, which appears to be the most promising vaccine on the market, which could, pending some more results, could go into development as soon as next month. They could start giving this out to people who are high risk or who are working in hospitals on the front lines of this thing. I don't think it's going to be called the Dolly Parton vaccine or anything like this, and she's being very humble about it. But Dolly, one of the most charitable people who's currently alive right now, she's given away countless, and this is true, countless millions of dollars to families who've been displaced by the wildfires. She's given away over 100 million books to kids in need, 100 million books to kids in need. And of course, she also wrote Jolene, and she was the executive producer of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So this woman's rap sheet is just miles long.
The other wrinkle to this story is because I may or may not have been planning on bringing this a slice on a later episode, but that's okay, because I have a deep well that I can pull from, and I'm just going to fabricate a story for the next episode we record together. But the other wrinkle to this, there's two, you know, she met Dr. Abumrad after she was in a car accident years ago, right. And he didn't even know that she was like a celebrity. You know, he's of Lebanese descent and not really kind of super in tune to American pop culture. However, his son is extremely attuned to American pop culture, because his son is Jad Abumrad, who is the creator of Radiolab, the podcast, as well as More Perfect, and another show, Tyler, that I know you talked to Jad Abumrad about,
right.
That is about the life and legacy of Dolly Parton. Yeah.
And we have that whole interview on relevantmagazine.com. You can read our interview with Jad Abumrad about his thoughts on Dolly Parton and about her faith, actually, which he got into her pretty deep on her feelings on her being a Christian.
Yeah.
She did a song with For King and Country in the last year.
Just a couple, few months back, right?
Dolly's legit. She's legit.
I mean, think about the 100 million books donated. I mean, it costs about $1 to print a book. That's $100 million.
My kids got some of her books.
We used to get those books when we lived in Tennessee.
Yeah,
they come in the mail every month.
Uh-huh. It's amazing.
Seriously.
We get them.
I had no idea. Wow.
It's amazing. If you have a kid, you can sign up and you by the time you hit junior high, you've got a small library.
Yep.
Facts.
I had no idea about that. That's crazy. Yeah. I just thought she was like 9 to 5 and like 80s country music. That's crazy.
Nah, 9 to 5 wasn't a metaphor. She's working all day long.
She's working all day.
but hey, people definitely should check out that show, Dolly Parton's America, that Jad Abumrad and WNYC produced. Is a really great show, not just about, you know, even if you're not interested in Dolly Parton, but her legacy as an artist and sort of a cultural figure dating back to, you know, honestly, just decades, you know, her thoughts about poverty, about, you know, kind of bipartisanship, about faith, you know, it really, really great show about, you know, gender equality. Like, she's a very smart, in addition to being an incredible songwriter, like a really thoughtful person. And the words from Jolene go great if you just say vaccine.
Good job, Jesse.
I'm just saying.
I like that.
We could do a song for her. That's figured out somebody in America. Didn't the Gregory Brothers still
that
around?
Podcast use some kind of soft science to find that she was maybe the most liked person in the world?
Yeah. They use like the Q rating. And what they found is, and this is sort of the introduction to that show, is like, obviously, in a lot of parts of the country that tend to be more, you know, kind of politically conservative, like red state, you know, she is very, very popular. They also kind of anecdotally talked about when she came to play like Madison Square Garden, would draw like huge crowds. A lot of people from the LGBTQ community have embraced Dolly Parton. She really has the ability to bring a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds together, which kind of makes her such an interesting figure, you know.
Wow. All right. What else you got, Tyler?
Last story is, this is about, I'm interested to hear how y'all feel about this one. So CBS has unleashed a new diversity pledge last week. They vowed that the casts of their reality shows, and they're the reality TV juggernaut, Survivor, Big Brother, Love Island, from now on, those casts are going to be 50% Black, Indigenous, and people of color. It's a really big move for the network. According to CBS Entertainment Group, released a statement saying the reality TV genre is an area that's especially underrepresented and needs to be more inclusive across development, casting, production, and all phases of storytelling. As we strive to improve all of these creative aspects, the commitments announced today are important first steps in sourcing new voices to create content and further expanding the diversity in our unscripted programming as well as on our network. Now, this is an interesting move for a lot of CBS has taken a lot of heat for this over the past few years for being an extremely white network, and that goes both for their scripted series and for their reality shows as well. In fact, there was a group called the Black Survivor Alliance, made up of former cast members of the reality shows of color, who talked about their experiences, which were pretty negative on these shows and felt like they were not given the same opportunities as people who were white who appeared on those shows. Big Brother drew criticism in 2019 for several white contestants' racist remarks on the show. And in 2017, when CBS launched its new fall lineup of scripted shows, there were 6 new series. They were all led by men. 5 of them were white. So this is a place where CBS has a lot of room to grow, and making half of these casts Black, Indigenous, or people of color otherwise is a step, but I'll be interested to hear how you all feel about this.
I think it's great. Like, obviously, right? I think it's great, but I haven't seen Survivor in, I mean, years. I didn't even know it was still on.
Facts. I'm going to keep it real. I'm indifferent.
Yeah. That
indifferent. I mean,
it is interesting to see, though, after this year that, you know, it was almost like a question of, is there going to be actual societal change after the protests, like with legislation, with policing, with culture, you know? And so it's interesting to see a positive pivot toward recognizing blind spots that a lot of the entertainment industry had previously. I mean, we know that after like Oscars So White, they put in, you know, guidelines for diversity in the film industry and stuff. It's just interesting to see that this fruit is maybe part of what's coming out of, you know, the outcry that our nation had this year. I don't know.
It just depends on the kind of show for me, because every time this happens, it becomes okay, we're going to do unscripted black shows. Now, let's go to the middle of the hood and show how black people overcame shooting at each other. It's like, or, you know, single mama stuff, or it's like finding the most salacious part of black culture and saying that this is what black people are. So like for me, I'm still kind of side-eye. I'm like, if your solution is, okay, we're going to hire more black and indigenous people, can you please show the best parts of our culture? Because, you know, we got some pretty cool stuff we're doing too. Getting shot at. So.
But I think all they're saying is like our Big Brother or World Race or whatever, Greatest Race,
the reality shows.
Amazing Race. That they're going to make sure that there's diversity represented in the contestants. So, I mean, it is what you're talking about. Like, it's normalizing the diversity of, or it's reflecting the diversity of our country, not tokenism. I don't know. It could be a good thing.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I'm always skeptical, bro. Like, I'm just gonna be honest. I'm always skeptical when white people are like, "We're gonna be more diverse," and it's
show, but of them just opening up. Okay, we're gonna make sure our reality TV shows. We're not scripting anything. I mean, supposedly we're not scripting things. We're gonna make sure it looks more like the way that our country looks versus just all white contestants
For sure. Well, the thing is, okay, I wasn't sure if it's like, okay, we're going to make more programming that's going to have, you know, black culture included. But then also at the same time, even in those type of environments as well, oftentimes what I've seen is, you know, okay, we're going to pick the most ratchet black person we can find, or we're going to pick the most like, and you know, no disrespect to this person, but we're going to pick Candace Owen because she's going to stir the thing up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, man, can we just get some regular, like inspiring black people? Like, don't get the most gangster person you can find, and don't necessarily have to get the most, I don't know a good way to say this, so I'm not going to say it, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Right.
Yeah. We know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Like, can we just get, you know, can we get the Miles Morales? Can we get those kind of guys? Yeah. Like the Chadwick Bosemans? Can we get, you know what I mean?
Well, the statement that he released here that CBS actually put out made an interesting point, which is that it needs to be more inclusive across development, casting, production, all phases of storytelling, which it seems like would address what you're talking about, Derek. Mm. You get people actually in the room where it happens, you know, at leadership positions, which is not what this particular commitment they made says it's going to do explicitly, but it feels like that would be where you'd actually see that shift towards not just representation, but actual cultural movement in terms of the narratives that are portrayed.
Yeah. Well, Kenya Barris, the show creator behind Black-ish and a bunch of others, he has that Netflix show called Black AF, and it's more of a autobiographical show, and he came up in the writing rooms, you know, sitcom writing rooms and stuff like that. And a major narrative in that is how white the industry is behind the closed doors, and that 99% of the time he was the only diversity in the room. And so that's one of the big things he calls out about the industry, is that the people making the content, making the decisions, need to be more representative, not just people on screen.
Yeah, but that's why Black-ish is so dope.
I love Black-ish so much.
It's such a good show, like, because he's Black-ish to me is this generation's Cosby Show.
Yeah,
like,
it's great.
Cosby Show really kind of showed black people in a light that people weren't used to, in a different world. And I think Black-ish shows that as well. And I think, you know, more shows like that, that just show the normal black experience. Like, I love that. So, yeah. I mean, look, hey, I guess, you know, look, man, we'll take anything we can get.
I will say too, on the Hollywood side, I think three of the most important, I would think that three of the most important young filmmakers working right now are young people of color, Ava DuVernay, Ryan Coogler, and Jordan Peele. I mean, you look at the difference, obviously, like Get Out had, you know, is it's a, it, that, that is a story, you know, that is the plot it hinges on ideas about race. But when you look at a movie like Us, you know, the cast, the star of the film happens to be a black family, but it they're presented as, you know, a norm, to your point, Derek, like a normal, I mean, aside from, spoiler alert, one of them may have kidnapped another version of herself in a past life. But aside from that, they're like a normal family on vacation, you know, yeah. But I do think there are some real, really exciting projects coming out from young black filmmakers that I think hopefully will continue to get a lot of attention in Hollywood.
Yep. Yeah, all right. Sure. Well, for a lot more of that type of content, check out what we're putting out every day at relevantmagazine.com. Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, everybody.
Stay tuned. Up next, Letitia Wright joins us.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can.
You're listening to Dolly Parton. The song is Jolene. Look at that timely production shift that we just did. Talk about Dolly Parton. We're going to play it in the break. Today's show is brought to you by BetterHelp. Is something preventing you from experiencing peace or achieving your goals? With the heaviness of all that's happening in our world, it can be difficult to find peace and purpose right now. And that's why there's BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You connect in a safe and private online environment, and you can start communicating in less than 24 hours. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, and you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You can message your counselor anytime. To top it all off, BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. We want you to start living a happier life today. As a Relevant podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/relevant. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/relevant. Well, Letitia Wright is known for her starring roles in Black Panther as Shuri, but she's also starred in movies like Ready Player One, The Commuter, and of course, Avengers Infinity War and others. Most recently, she stars in the TV series Small Axe. Letitia recently sat down with our very own Tyler Huckabee to talk about that show and about her faith, the pressure of fame, and a lot more. Here's part of our conversation with Letitia Wright.
So I know, Letitia, you've been spending a lot of time inside. We all have. How do you, what do you do to take care of yourself when you're feeling stress or anxiety?
Definitely, first and foremost, prayer. You know, I go by God's word and the fact that, you know, his word says he doesn't, there's no burden, and his yoke is easy, his burden is light. So, and there's no anxiety, like, to be anxious for nothing. There's no anxiety in the kingdom. You know, you can be anxious, and he understands it, but he says be anxious for nothing through his word. So I just try to apply his word and just pray it through. Whatever I feel, I pray it through. And I'm learning that exercise is good. You know, I went back to the gym today, which is great. And I'm just, this lady that was before me, her session was before me, she ended her session and she's like, I want to go again. And I'm like, whoa. So all the chemicals and good stuff in her brain was popping off. So exercising and eating well and going to bed at a good time. And surrounding myself with good books, good people, good friends, just a balanced life as best as possible. It's not easy to have that, but as best as possible.
Can I ask this? What does prayer look like for you?
Oh, man. So I'm like 5 years in the Lord. I'm like a five-year-old in the Lord. I'm like 5 years, coming up to 5 years and completing 5 years of being a Christian, and like, oh, giving my life to Christ. It's been so many different things, and it's like a relationship I'm building with the Lord to understand what prayer is. At first I thought, you know, I pray as I feel. and then at foot. And then secondly, it was just like, I have to pray like at a certain time and at a certain hour. But I'm learning that it's a combination of the two. Discipline has to be there, because in order to maintain that relationship and connection, you have to have some sort of discipline. And it's not about how you feel most of the time. It's just about your faith. So I cannot feel like praying, but I know I have to pray in some sort of way. It could be just so then it becomes the way in which I pray when it's time to pray can be creative, if that makes sense. So when it's at night, I might not feel the urge to pray in a particular way that I'm accustomed to. I might just write a poem to the Lord or sing a worship song to him or just speak to him in the silent moments. Yeah, and just learning about the discipline of prayer too, and how important that is, because you don't want it to be like a chore or a task, but you want it to be a connection.
Tell me the story there. You became a Christian 5 years ago. What happened? Why did you decide to become one?
The motivating factor mainly for me was that I knew that I wasn't living a life fulfilled. I knew it when I was a teenager. I knew it when I was started coming into my early 20s. I just knew that something was missing. I just didn't know that missing puzzle was Jesus. I didn't want anything to do with Jesus, actually. Yeah, didn't want anything to do with it. I just thought the typical kind of prejudiced things that you would think about Jesus, especially as a young black person too. You think, oh man, it's a white guy. I don't want to worship that. And I didn't see him for his purity and his love, and didn't see him beyond color. I just saw him in a prejudiced way. I just saw him in a way that it was just negative thinking from my end. And yeah, just the dark place that I was in. And I just kind of saw my other friends take a leap of faith with Christ. And I just kind of, just this sense of peace that they had when I saw them is a peace that you can't buy. And I just knew it off the bat. That's what my life was meant to look like. That's what my spirit is meant to look like. I just knew it. My friend was very beautiful and contacting me in my lowest place. And I just tried. I said, I'll try Jesus for a year, see what happens. And I'm still here, and I'm not going back.
All right, so my experience with pictures of Jesus growing up was very different, because obviously all my pictures of Jesus looked like me. And obviously now I realize that was very different for people who aren't white. Was that a struggle for you growing up?
Yeah. You know what? Through maturity, you grow. And I remember, like, my dad recently gave his life to the Lord. And I remember he struggled with that. And I struggled with it in the beginning too. And he's just like, man, you know, I want to do this thing, but I'm not sure. And then it just comes with a maturity and a love. And it's like, why should I care about the color of someone's skin who got nailed to a cross for me, for my sins, and to make me whole? That doesn't matter anymore. And that comes from maturity. Not saying that Jesus was a white guy that looks like you from, you know, he was in Egypt, and Egypt is very hot, and Israel is very hot. So you kind of know that you would have some beautiful melanin there, but irregardless, he's bigger than that. He's bigger than just what his hair looked like or his skin looked like. It was about his heart, and it's about what he did for us here on earth, and how real he is, how real the Spirit of God is.
So let's talk about Mangrove. It's fantastic. Can you tell people a little bit about the story?
Mangrove is a part of a collection of 5 films that are all combined to make an anthology series called Small Acts. And the origins of the idea came from Steve McQueen's desire to put a light and a spotlight onto the many black British heroes and men and women who were involved in our society on a day-to-day level that did great things that is unheard of, and also to show the culture, specifically the West Indian culture, on mainstream media that we haven't seen in a long time, and as much as we need to, and hoping and praying that it's an education. And I'm so honored and grateful to be a part of that.
All of these stories in Small Acts are just so poignant and so important. And there's a lot of attention on stories like this right now. Do you feel pressure from all of that?
Oh, man. Funny enough, I don't see it as pressure. I just see it as an opportunity. Opportunity to tell the truth and put something out there that's meaningful. And I think the pressure may come from hoping that people like it, but then people like things and dislike things, you know? Not everybody's going to like something. But I think, no, I don't feel any pressure, or I never felt that, because I just always want to do something that is meaningful. And as long as I find it meaningful enough to be a part of it, then that's okay for me, you know? And however you receive it, it's how you've received it. But in the grand scheme of things, as long as it's meaningful from the jump and it has something to say, then I just do it and just let it go.
So this last question is a little strange, and I apologize for it, but I hope you'll indulge me here. When I was thinking about this interview a little bit and just going over some of the other conversations that I've seen you have in public, you have so much joy in your presence. You're a very joyful person. What encouragement do you have for people who sort of are struggling with feeling that joy right now?
So I'll use myself for example, and if it relates to someone, then praise God. But say, for example, I've been going through a difficult situation of trying to come to terms with something that recently happened, and it's huge and it's painful. But in the midst of dealing with it, because it's a real situation and it's real emotions, there's little pockets of joy, and I try to just take it as it comes. You know, it could be my little sister laughing or making a joke, or the birds flying across my balcony. Just finding the pockets of joy to get you through the hard times, and then eventually it just transforms into wisdom and life-affirming wisdom that you can take with you. And that when you are in a place of peace and like ease, and like the weather is not so crazy, the storm is not out there, you're in a place of peace in your life, although the major pockets of joy that you can have, you just keep.
That was Letitia Wright. To see more of that conversation, check out our feature with her in the brand new issue of Relevant. It's available now for free at relevantmagazine.com.
In the deep end with the DCs, where the slaves jumped in the coral reef, all I see reefs for over 400 ain't a field. My foe runner keep killing us, we gon' kill mother. Yeah. That's a born sinner. Only time I ever go female, J. Cole on it. Everything I hear got bass on it. Strings attached, Dre chronic, rat-a-tat-tat. Bullets in our back, do you love black or just listen to it? Are you for the movement? Only music, could the only fan make a bad.
You're listening to Lecrae featuring Rhapsody. The song is Deep End Remix. Well, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, today we have our latest installment of the Fall Wellness Series we've been doing, brought to you by UHSM. This week, we talked to Brittany Moses, an LA native and mental health advocate who's helping raise awareness for mental health and providing people with the information they need to live a well-balanced life. Brittany sat down with Tyler to talk about how to find a good counselor and the proper role of faith in mental health struggles. Like I mentioned, the Fall Wellness Series, both here on the podcast and at relevantmagazine.com, is brought to you by UHSM, member-to-member health sharing. You can see why millions are choosing this Christian alternative to traditional insurance. Ask if you qualify for UHSM membership today by calling or texting 833-367-8476. That's 833-367-UHSM. Or by visiting uhsm.com/care. Here's part of our conversation with Brittany Moses.
Brittany, maybe you can start off and just tell us a little bit about what it is you do.
Yeah. So I'm really kind of at the intersection of faith, culture, and mental health. Born and raised in Los Angeles, I'm in California, and studying psychology and research assisting at UCLA's Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior. So in my studies, in research, working on a thesis, but then also I do a lot of like opening up the conversation about mental health in a holistic way in faith settings, in general settings, but I think mostly in the faith community. I was a church kid, so just that blending of the theology and the psychology and even the science, as far as we're looking at it comprehensively, is kind of what I'm really big about.
So in your line of work, what would you say are some of the biggest misconceptions you've encountered in the faith community around mental health?
I think there's two big things that come to mind. One is, you know, I think throughout the history of the church, we've kind of had this 100% spiritual view about mental health, which is all, you know, the symptoms of mental health and the causes are all a spiritual issue, just solely a spiritual issue, which can unfortunately lead people to be demonized, or something must be wrong with your faith for you to be, or your relationship with God for you to be having this, you know. And so the biggest thing I advocate is that we are biopsychosocial spiritual beings, biological, psychological, social, and spiritual human beings. That's how we're wired. You know, the Bible says to love your God, Lord your God, with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. We have all these dynamics that make us a human being and that also contribute to our mental health. So just addressing the whole person, that's probably the biggest one. And then I think the second thing I like to really debunk is this idea that that again, something must be wrong with you spiritually or morally or your character if you are experiencing depression or anxiety or have been even diagnosed or even need to take medication. And I think that just comes from black and white thinking and the assumption that, you know, good things must happen to people who do the right things and bad things must happen to people who don't do the right things or are in some kind of disobedience or unrepentant sin. You know, Matthew 5:45 says, rain falls on the just and the unjust alike, right? Jesus comes across the blind man in John 9, and they're like, who sinned, Rabbi, him or his parents that he ended up blind? And Jesus says, nobody sinned, neither. This happened so God may be glorified. And he, you know, goes on to heal him and he becomes a witness. But I think it's shown biblically that, hey, these things happen and it's a part of the human experience.
You know, I think it has been encouraging to see a lot of churches and faith communities get a little better at the role spirituality should play, since so many of them gave spirituality just a little too big of a role maybe in the past. But what would it look like to properly contextualize faith within the conversation around mental health? What role does faith play?
Yeah, that is a really great question. Because for me, like, both equally play a role in my life, right? My faith and the practical side. And so one, I think, I really do believe that the church is a solution in our communities to the mental health crisis, because research for over 25 years has shown that when a person's in psychological distress, they will go to their church, they will go to their clergy or their house of worship before they ever step foot to a mental health professional. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about having conversations on equipping the church with this, because that's where people are going. You know, they're in your pews, they're at the altar. And I think there was a study done by, I want to say, Lifeway, where they found that something like 59% of pastors had counseled someone who went on to receive an acute mental diagnosis, meaning there was something more severe and persistent, and they kind of slipped right by them. So all of that to say, I do think the church plays a kind of preventative role in being able to even just learn the basics and being able to see maybe when something more severe is going on that needs more help. Partnering with mental health professionals as a kind of first response to that, but also as a social support, you know, for soul care, you know, as well. And that's the role the church has always played. You know, before we had institutionalized health care, the church was actually, the monasteries were converted into places of care where they took care of the sick and travelers and mentally and physically sick. So the church always had this community role in supporting those who were struggling or battling illness.
I think something a lot of us struggle with is when we have a friend or a family member who is struggling with a mental health issue, we don't really know what to say other than like, I'll pray for you. So what are some practical tips that you can give us for those of us who want to be helpful? We want to provide a good support system. We just don't always know how.
Yeah, I love this because I do have hope. Like, I do believe in my heart that even when there are people who say the wrong things, they really are well-intentioned and they really want to help. And I think one of the first things a person can do is to educate yourself. You know, if you have a loved one who has been diagnosed with bipolar or BPD or trauma, PTSD, complex PTSD, educate yourself. What are some of the signs? What are some of the symptoms? Even ask the loved one, okay, what are some things that typically help you, you know, when you have an episode or when you're in this place, you know, what do you need? I mean, I think it's this whole approach of meeting people where they are, and asking them how you can help is a really big one. Being a accountability in a way of when you even notice that something's working in their life, being able to even point it out and say, hey, I noticed like, you've been, I don't know, exercising lately or writing more and you seem like you're doing a lot better. I just wanted to encourage you to like keep on. Like I see you and I'm here for you. Just kind of that positive reinforcement even is great. Or even I always say, just like if someone was physically sick, you know, what do we do when someone's physically sick? We might be like, hey, can I bring you food? Can I drive you to the doctor? How can I help right now? What can I help you take care of? Why don't we treat mental health issues the same way?
That was Brittany Moses. For more content like this, make sure to check out our wellness series every Tuesday and Thursday at relevantmagazine.com. Well, many thanks to Letitia Wright for joining us. You can follow her on Instagram at Letitia Wright, and you can see her in pretty much every huge movie that comes out. Also, check out our full feature with her in the new issue of Relevant. It's available right now at relevantmagazine.com for free. Thanks to the support of UHSM. Go check it out, relevantmagazine.com. Click on the magazine link, and there's our November-December issue. It features Matthew McConaughey, Letitia, Brooke Ligerwood, Social Club Misfits, so much more. Some great content. Go check it out. On that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Derek Miner.
We'll see you on Tuesday. Have a good weekend, everyone.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com. Relevant Podcast Network.